You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to DottoTech. I am Steve Dotto and we are glad you are joining us today, the show dedicated to helping you get the most you can out of your technology. Joining me, our erstwhile producer, Art Factora. How are we doing this week, Art?
It's been busy, but I'm not complaining.
You're not complaining?
No, halfway through the week.
Yeah, and summer's nowhere near us yet.
Yeah, it was horrible. I took a walk yesterday and
well, they're calling
cloudy
it Junuary these days, aren't they? Well, last year apparently it was like this. I guess we forget just how bad June has been for the last few years, but it's global warming, man. It's wrecking us. So you doing any comedy?
Yes, I'll be tomorrow night. You can find me at the Sin Bin. That's 2nd and Yukon, just underneath the Cambie Street Bridge. And then the 23rd of June, it's Saturday, I'll be at the Rio Theater.
Really?
The world-famous historic Rio Theater.
And you're going to be telling some jokes?
I'll be telling a few jokes.
Good.
Off color. So 19 plus.
Okay, 19 plus. Sort of like this show.
Yes.
That laugh you hear in the background, that's Paul DeMera. How are you doing, Paul?
Just ducky.
Yeah, just ducky.
Just ducky. Just,
that's good. Actually, I did something new this week, too. I posted for the first time one of the videos. I've been playing around with these new videos, these how-to videos. And we posted it on lifehack.org. And getting a fair bit of traction. We've got them up on the website, so I've done a few different demos. They're kind of hearkening back to the old Dotto's Data Cafe days when I used to do product demos and show people how to do things. So we did one on Evernote. It's doing pretty well. I mean, I'm enjoying doing these videos. But, you know, here's the amazing thing about what's happened in the world of technology. When I did my TV show...
is this where you're going to tell us you had, like, a crew of 30 people and now you can do them at home? Sorry, did I just ruin it for everyone?
So what do we got on the show today, Art?
Come on, be specific.
Have I done that? Have I told this story before on the air?
I'm a mind reader. You, Steve, you and I are on a different level.
Okay, now, when I did the TV show back in the day, there was a crew of like 30.
Wow.
No, there wasn't. But let's think about it. When I did the show at Knowledge Network, when I did my first series ever, we'd had three camera guys on the floor. We had a floor director. We had an audio guy. Then we had a switcher, a technical producer, we had a director, we had a PA, we had the producer, we had a graphics person.
Oh.
And so that was
wow.
The crew that worked the shoot. So that was 11 people.
Jeez.
And then, of course, the show would go into post-production and it would be edited. And then, you know, it would go into distribution and it would be duplicated and sent out. So maybe 20 people would put their hands on the show before it got to the television screens across the country. I'm recording these videos now sitting at home with a consumer camera, a piece of software on a Mac, and a decent quality audio system.
Awesome. They look awesome.
Here's the thing. They're not as good as the TV show,
sure,
obviously.
Sure.
But what is good enough? Like, is it 11 times, the cost of pretty much nothing? It takes me 2 to 3 hours to produce one, whereas in the past, the same demo would take us 2 to 3 hours in studio to produce with all of these people. So 11, let's say 20 people spending 3 hours, so 60 hours of labor to produce this demo versus 3 hours. And the quality is not as good, but it's not that bad.
And it's on demand.
Yes.
It's on demand, and it's the way it should be. Because obviously content like this shouldn't be on network television anymore. Some question is whether or not it ever should have been. But it's not on network television anymore. But it's where people, in this one that we did, the first real one that I did here is on Evernote. And, it's like 10, 12 minutes. It's a little bit longer than I'd like. But it's, people, if they search, they want to learn about Evernote, which we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
on our app show. It's a great primer, and it introduces it in a really nice way. And I'm kind of pleased with it. I think I'm looking forward to listeners.
It's an awesome bite-sized chunk of learning the ins and outs of this software. That's the ticket.
And it's unfortunate that part of the craft of producing these things is going away because, there were talented people.
Absolutely.
That worked. But at the end of the day, is it worth that much money to produce something along this line? It's a darn good question.
Hmm.
It's a dang good question. Paul DeMera, you sent me a link. Now, for those
links
people,
are good.
For those people that don't know, Paul is an audiophile And I don't
I don't think that really encompasses exactly what Paul is.
You know what? I used to call myself an audiophile. Then somebody said, maybe you don't want to do that. You want to be calling yourself a music lover, because sometimes people have this opinion of audiophiles that they have, you know, this their nose in the air or whatever. And I'm not like that. I'm not going out and buying $50,000 turntables or stuff. It's not going to happen.
You completely have your nose in the air. What, did you agree, Art?
Absolutely. But but he's very approachable. But
he's approachable, but he tells us we are all stupid.
No, I don't say that.
See, I like my iPod. I think my iPod does a great job of playing music, and I listen, and it's great. But you're telling me that I'm listening to crap.
No, you're not listening to crap. You're just missing part of the excitement that's built into the music. When you listen to a live performance, why do people pay so much money for that, right?
Well, live performances I get.
Yeah.
Because now you think that the sound at the live performance is everything?
The experience of being there is absolutely a big part of it.
I think the fact that it's never going to happen the same way twice. It's like live theater.
True.
You know, when I used to do theater, or when I'm in plays and stuff, I like it never better than when something goes a little bit wrong, because it makes it a totally unique experience for that audience that is only shared once. So I really want to see, like, the lead guitar fall off the stage.
Cause it's not going to happen again, right?
Yeah, because that's probably not going to happen again. But and I'm kind of being a little bit facetious there. But, you know, live music is about the event itself. And the quality of sound, it varies depending on your venue.
Absolutely.
But I always thought that, you know, and this is the thing that you guys that love vinyl, because Paul is a vinyl proselytizer. I didn't say anything rude. I just said you basically like vinyl.
And I do.
But I always thought that the digital version had to be better, because there's no, it's nothing but the music.
That's the thinking, but in reality, if you really want to listen to music, what you do is you close your eyes. And I learned that technique maybe 3-4 years ago. And you close your eyes and you just let your mind enjoy the music. And so when you listen to vinyl versus a CD, it's a different experience. It's more of an emotional experience. And the best way to describe an emotional experience is one where you want to tap your foot, or you something happens to you. I can't describe it because it's different for everybody, but it's the same excitement kind of thing you get at the live concert, that energy and wow factor from the energy of the artist doing what they do.
So you truly believe that if I have a 160-bit iPod recording,
160 kilobit,
160 kilobit iPod recording, and a good set of headphones, of, you know, earmuff type headphones, that's a really high quality headphone, and I listen to music off my iPod, that I'm not getting as good an experience as I can off of a top end vinyl system.
Absolutely. There's a big difference. Even at 320, which is the top of the line for MP3s, 320 kilobit, that's as fast as it goes, you're still missing stuff that you don't even realize you're missing until you hear it. And that's really
the point. But isn't that stuff like scratches?
No, the stuff is the emotion in the music. The, you know, when you listen to a piano or the cymbals or anything that sort of makes you go, yeah, 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 the beat of the drum, just all of the
all those things, though.
Well, yeah, yeah, you hear them, but you don't hear them the way the artist intended you to hear them. That's part of the key point.
It's still a reproduction.
It's snake oil, right?
This is all leading. And I know that there's a different sound. There's a different texture to the sound.
Yes.
And I can understand that might be more appealing. And I question whether or not it's better, but I understand that it is different.
It's a personal choice.
And it might be just as enjoyable or even more enjoyable for me. I don't know, because I haven't. You keep telling me I got to come over and listen to your system. But this is all because there's two stories that you wanted to mention. One of them is you're a retailer out in Pitt Meadows, Port Moody?
Jamie, who's a good friend of mine, just this week he was in the paper on Saturday. I guess he purchased, and I haven't talked to him other than Facebook a little bit this week, he purchased the entire CBC music collection.
Is that just the Vancouver one, or for all
Vancouver?
Of
Vancouver, okay. And I think some of the vinyl, if I understand the article correctly, did go back to back east. But it's suggesting that he picked up 37,000 LPs. That's a lot of records.
That's going to fill his minivan. I'm just saying now, that's going to be a couple of minivans full of records.
We're talking Cuban.
So you're looking forward to going there and picking through the collection.
Jamie's obviously going to pick up some of the special stuff, but there's a lot of Canadian music that you know, is really amazing. And so there's all this vinyl that was obviously well looked after. They had a librarian taking care of it all. And it's just cool. I mean, and so out at Apollo Records, I'm assuming, Jamie, I should really talk to him about that, is putting it all up for sale.
Okay, we'll put a link up to that story. And what was the other event that you wanted to talk about?
Well, this weekend, another good buddy of mine, and he's the guy that's responsible for me having this passion for vinyl. I'd say about 6 years ago, I went into his store, Innovative Audio, and at the time it was on 64th. And he played a record. And back in 1983, I bought a CD player because I had records. I used to do dances. Like, I used to DJ for dances with records and all that stuff. So I moved into CD and I just sort of, you know, pushed the record player and all the records aside, like everybody did, right? And got the CD because you put it in there. You got a remote control. It's simple.
Because it's better.
It's simpler. It's convenient, right? So I go and I listen to this record and it's like a light bulb went on in my head. It's like going back and, you know, my dad used to own a 67 Camaro, and there was an experience when you're in the car. There's something wow factor about it.
Well, you're amazed that it was running, unlike today's automobiles.
That's true. So when I heard this vinyl, I went, wow, I now know what I'm missing in the music, because I always found that the CD sounded a little dry. They just didn't have that kick, right? And as soon as I heard the vinyl, I was like, oh. And so that's what started me on my journey. And so a lot of other people seem to be going on the same journey, because year after year right now, vinyl sales are 50% up year over year in the U.S. and Canada. So it's obviously a small percentage. But
the event I was asking you about.
The event, yes, I got sidetracked here. So this weekend on Sunday, good weather assuming, Gord has a vintage audio garage sale. He's got a store, but what he does is he opens up the parking lot and it's free. And basically vendors can bring their vinyl,
bring your old record player,
all that great stuff and have other people buy it from you.
Because for the people that do love vinyl, a lot of musicians are now recording and distributing their stuff back on vinyl again, right?
Absolutely.
But what about gear? What about buying stereo gear? Are the manufacturers still making turntables and that sort of stuff?
In the last 2-3 years, because the numbers are growing, it's all about the bag of money, people like Sony and other manufacturers are actually reintroducing turntables, and they're putting phono input jacks on their receivers now, because they stopped doing that a few years ago. So London Drug's perfect example. They've got a couple of turntables in stock. You can, you know, go down there and pick up a
Sony.
Are
the turntables as good, or are they better than they used
to be? They're decent. You know, back in
you this, wanted one that was like a cast, not cast, you wanted a turn.
Heavy,
you
know, is good.
Heavy with a big belt, and you'd go in and you'd lubricate and all that sort of stuff, right?
So they're going to play your records fine. If you want to get that little extra wow factor out of it, yeah. Some of the neat things that Gord does at his store is he refurbishes turntables, and he basically tunes them up to original spec, and you can buy maybe the turntable you used to have 30 years ago. So a lot of people my age are getting back into this, and they want to go back into records because of the experience of the whole thing.
Okay, well, give me the links to this, and I will post
them. So it's on IAVS Canada, and if you look up Innovative Audio, that's another way to do it on Google, and it's going to be on the June the 10th from 9 to 3.
We'll post this on the website. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about blogging, a blogging conference coming up in Vancouver. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Coming up in Vancouver, June 15th and 16th, is the Personal Blogging and Social Media Conference, otherwise known as Northern Voice 2012. Joining me in studio are two of the organizers. We have Shane Burney and Jonathan Narvey. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks very much for having us.
It's my pleasure. Now, you guys are blogging experts, I guess, or are you just fans of bloggers?
I'm a blogging god.
Oh, yeah. That's Shane Burley claiming deity in the blogging community. And that,
of course.
That
yeah,
should
I
go
mean,
well.
You know, I rule.
Well, good for you. So tell me about the kind of the genesis of Northern Voice. It's been around for a few years, and you guys have developed quite a following in the blogging community.
Yeah, it started in 2005, and it was downtown at the UBC campus down there. It was about, I think, 50 people or so, and most of the people were like, what's a blog? What? Uh-huh. What? And it's grown. It grew to about 500 last year, 550, somewhere in there. I'm trying to remember exactly how many. Mm-hmm. It was a lot.
It got really big.
And it's been going strong for ever since. It's unique because it focuses on personal blogging rather than I am a corporate executive and I need to have somebody doing my blob. No, blog, sir.
blog. So from a personal perspective then, so people, you're looking at everything from mommy bloggers to people who just are social dissidents to people who want to blog about food. Am I correct?
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, well, I guess that wraps it up then.
All right, thanks so much. Thanks for coming out. And I'm so
here.
Glad
we just covered it all. And I get a little bit confused about blogs. What, when I consider the whole world of the spectrum of bloggers, do you folks have like a kind of designation where you have amateur versus semi-pro versus pro bloggers? Or do they, I mean, at what number of people have to follow you? I guess this is what it is. What number of people have to follow your blog before you're a legitimate blogger and you're not just narcissistic?
No, I'm not. I'm no longer a god. I'm just a narcissist. I better just leave. I don't know. I think for me, if you have at least your parents reading it, which, you know, is success in most bloggers, you know, arenas of experience, I think that to me is for this conference is what success means, is that is, you know, the parents. That's it. That's all you need. Just get started. Write the damn thing out there. Put it out there. You know.
Okay, then what are you teaching me at this thing then? Because am I learning the blogging tools? Am I learning about WordPress versus going on to other sites? Am I learning how to connect with other bloggers or write for other blogs so that more people will come to my site? Or am I learning about best ways to am I learning about writing skills and about the best way to express myself online?
Well, those are all part of what we teach at Northern Voice, although it's not just about teaching. It's about interaction.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the speakers who go to this conference aren't just going there to present. They're going there to learn.
Okay.
So, getting back to what Shane was saying a moment ago, what's a successful blog? It's one that... is read by your parents, by your friends, by people who you feel connected with in any number of ways. Share your hobby.
And primarily this is a social focus as opposed to a business focus on this.
Yeah.
Yes, that's true. Certainly we do get business bloggers who show up. And those are the ones who like to infuse a bit of a personal voice into their company website, into mm-hmm. their company blog.
Okay. Now, I'm looking at the schedule now, and it's all opening up with a keynote from the Open Media Foundation. They're talking about Slack division to Activision to activism. Sorry, to inter.
What a great system that was.
Interactivism. I've never heard that word before. Slack division, Slacktivism to interactivism. That's a difficult one to say, guys.
It's easier to read than
it
to
is.
Say
it, it, I read it, and then you know, so and true. I'm a professional. Maybe I should get into blogging. But then you go into breakout sessions, and I wanted to kind of hit some of the highlights of some of the different breakout sessions you have. Here's what that I'm interested in: choosing a blogging platform. So that's going to is that going to talk about the tools? Because is it all still WordPress out there, or are there other platforms that people should be considering?
That session is being done by a gentleman by the name of Alex Blackie, who is, I think he's still 16. Has he had a birthday recently?
Yeah, I'm looking at his picture here.
I do a podcast with him where I'm in my I'm almost 40, and he's 16, and we have these very different ideas about technology, and where I ran a BBS when I was in high school, all this mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And
he doesn't know what a BBS is.
Yeah, exactly. although he did send me a link the other day, which you can archive old BBSs if you still have the data and they host it through like a terminal window. Anyway, it was very nerdy. But essentially, he's going to be going over from Drupal to WordPress to insert everything else, including like Blogger and WordPress.com and stuff like that. Because he flops around all the time. He is such a nerd that he uses one system and then rebuilds his website into another and then does it again. Like within a period of a month, he's used like three different platforms to the point where he's programmed his own and then gone back to other ones. And it's fascinating. So it's going to be very cool because he's touched pretty much all of them, I think, by now. And he has all kinds of really strong opinions about which ones are great for certain levels of expertise. So... it's kind of neat.
Some of the other more serious sessions, you have ones on Canadian copyright and other ones on free speech and the legality of linking. So you're going to be dealing with a lot of copyright issues and technical issues. How big are they, and how much should the casual or social blogger be concerned about copyright issues, etc.?
Well, when I teach people about blogging and whatnot, I always tell them that they have to be aware that anything they create is awesome. Anything they borrow or take from anywhere on the web is a bad idea, because even from clip art to things that, you know, I took all this guy's text, it was free, I could just highlight and copy it. You shouldn't do that. And sort of what the etiquette is of that kind of stuff. Like, if you're quoting from news articles from, say, CBC, and you want to have a bit of the text, generally, the unwritten rule is, yes, you can have a little bit of it as long as you're linking back to it.
As long as there's an active link in there.
Yeah, you grab, like, maybe a highlight. Like, these are the three sentences I really liked, and you're, you know, the rest of the
comments. And if you want to read more, you click here and you go back. Yeah.
So there's stuff like that.
And that seems legitimate on almost any level of use.
Yeah. Especially since now that I think didn't C11 go through just recently? Am I correct?
I don't know.
I was just going to look it up, but that's changing the copyright world too.
I'm looking it up.
So do look it up, because I was talking about it last week with somebody, and I just haven't had a chance to check it out. But that does a lot, specifically with recording studio artists and whatnot. Like, but there's all kinds of different things. Like, now we might actually have a parody coverage. So,
yes.
Like,
well, I know we're allowed to parody things.
Not until last week.
Oh, okay.
Technically, no. You could parody all you want, but it was actually a violation of copyright. So, not that anyone did that I'm aware of, anyway. Sued anyone for it.
And Jonathan, you're doing a session called Here Be Dragons.
Yeah. This is.
And it's a little bit different.
This is going to be a fun session. You know, not all of the sessions are sort of speaker type of sessions. This one's almost more of an interactive workshop. So we're going to try to recreate some of the magic of the War of the Worlds broadcast back in the, I think it was the 1930s or the late 20s by Orson Welles, where, you know, with a single radio broadcast, he, you know, really, created such a stir throughout an entire country. We're going to try to do that through tweeting, Facebooking, live blogging in about 45 minutes.
You're going to try and lie.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I call it being creative.
Okay. No, Daddy, I wasn't lying. I was being creative.
Well, okay. We don't want to actually give the impression that people are actually being chewed up and torched by actual fire-breathing
dragons. Do you have a theme that you're working on, or is that going to come up? If you're waiting for the group to decide what the fabrication is going to be, it could be a long 45 minutes.
Well, no. The title is actually Here Be Dragons, or what is it, or Zombies or Aliens?
And I'm looking at it. I'm just looking at your thing. Here Be Dragons or Aliens or Zombies. So you're going to try and you're going to do an alien or zombie thing?
Yeah, they get to vote on which way we're going, and then within 30 seconds they will have a scenario. They'll have certain facts that they can distribute, and of course they can make up facts on their own.
Okay, and they're going to use Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Yeah,
maybe not LinkedIn.
Maybe.
You never know.
Exactly.
Pitch focused entirely on LinkedIn.
So yeah, the idea is the people within the session will be communicating with each other, but of course, people outside the session who are part of Northern Voice will be seeing these messages, and ultimately, people outside
And the goal of this session is
create a stir. Just see what is possible within 45 minutes.
A little bit of digital graffiti going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to return. We'll talk about who should be attending your conference. If I'm sure the website is being overwhelmed at this moment. The website, by the way, for it is northernvoice.ca, 2012 northernvoice.ca. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned into Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joined in studio by Jonathan Narvey and Shane Burley. They are founders or organizers for Northern Voice, a blogging conference, personal blogging conference, and social media conference, which is happening June 15th and 16th in Vancouver. It's down at the UBC downtown, is it?
This year it's at the W2.
Okay.
So it's a fairly new building. It's kind of cool, actually.
Okay. Now, it's a two-day conference. Friday, you've got two full days, starting at 8:15 each morning. Second day, you've got, a series of breakout sessions, better blogging productivity. So there's going to be some real skills and tools that you're going to be teaching as well.
Yeah, we've spread it out over the entire 2 days, where there's a lot of stuff about conceptual things like what kind of voice do you want to use, what kind of method of blogging do you want to use, like do you want to use audio, text, or video, or photographs and stuff like that. And then there's the tools section, which is mainly there's the 101 track, which talks a lot about that. Then on the second day, there's a few sessions about there's actually one on Pinterest.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are bloggers getting to the point that they look down their noses at some of the other social media tools like Facebook? We consider our Facebook status update, the microblog, or even Twitter, where you're just down to such a few words. Do real bloggers mock people that follow these Johnny-come-latelys?
I don't know of any blogger who's doing that, because I think that a lot of bloggers are using these social media tools to help share what they've already got. So mm-hmm. they're using Twitter or Facebook or whatever to send links out about the stories they're telling.
It's all folds together.
Absolutely.
What do you write about, Jonathan?
I write about business, technology, politics, life in Vancouver. And as a result, I've got a whole bunch of blogs, probably eight or so.
You've got eight blogs?
Something like that, yeah.
Is there like a clearinghouse where we can find them all so we can put them up, or am I going to have to put up eight links?
You can go to my personal blog at jnarvi.com.
Okay.
The title of the blog is New Media.
Okay. Narvey.com?
Jnarvey.com, yes.
Okay, I'm going there as we speak. Go ahead.
And today that blog links out to all of the stuff that I'm doing on other blogs or on other websites. And actually, Shane has done a similar thing. Well, did that long before I ever did. He's got the your personal site.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. Well, I've got... I'm doing a talk at the Northern Voice called The Evolution of a Personal Voice. And mm-hmm. essentially what it is that I've been blogging for so long that I've been able to identify like what I talked about when I was in university versus when I, entered the job market and what sort of jobs I had. And then as luck would have it, my mother in 1978 had a tape recorder, and she said, I think I'm going to give this to you, Shane. I want you to record yourself. So I actually have audio of me as like a 5-year-old talking to my security blanket and stuff like that. So as far as I'm concerned, I was podcasting in the 70s. So I've actually converted all that, digitized it all, and I've made it into a series of podcast episodes of like, this is what I'm doing, which I'm not releasing until a couple days before the conference, because it's kind of bizarre. And over that period of time, I've collected video now, the old VHS cam recorder thing mm-hmm. my mother had and all this kind of stuff. And it's just interesting seeing what I was like as a kid listening to myself, listening to Battlestar. I turned on the recorder for one episode, and I was recording Battlestar Galactica.
The original with Lauren Green.
When it was on television. And I remember somebody said, well, how do you know when you record these things? And I'm like, well, I know, go to Wikipedia, and I know, oh, what episode is this? Okay, that's the one that broadcast on like April 15th of 1970, whatever. And so I've been collecting that all that together, and during this entire process, I've realized that I've spread myself all over the web, and when people ask me, well, where's your blog? And I send them my blog, and where's your podcast? Blog? I have to go to somewhere else. So I've got an aggregator now at shaneburley.com.
Okay.
That points to everything that is valid anyway at this point. And I'm always adding to it, because I've got all these different things that I do. And it's been really hard to do that, to actually go and identify, because I found podcasts I did in like 2005 that I'd forgotten about, and I've tried to grab files and try to collect it all so that it doesn't get lost, because as luck would have it, tape recorders didn't, some of the tapes I have degraded too badly, and you can barely hear them and stuff. But yeah.
Let me ask about a bit about the evolution of blogging then, because, you know, it started out obviously as text, but now people are doing podcasting, they're doing vblogs. It's really wherever you're most comfortable in communicating. And are people, do you think that the preponderance of people attending your conference are going to be ones that are looking at it as a diary and as their journey, or are they trying to change something? Are they trying to educate or change something about the society and the world around them? Because I get a sense that your stuff is very much you're looking at it almost as a diary, looking at how you looked at the world at different
definitely
times in your life.
Well, specifically for this talk, yeah, that's kind of, it's really been a journey to kind of go through all this whole stuff and listen to it and kind of go, I thought, what about Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Really? Like, my mother's basically interrogating me in one of these going, so tell me why you thought Wonder Woman was what, sexy and hot? I'm like, God, what was I, like, seven? But there's also...
Does your mom have a blog?
No, she doesn't. She reads mine to make sure that, you know, so she calls me every day about it.
Okay.
I can't believe you said that about me. But the evolution of blogs, I mean, I remember back in 2005 when Northern Voice started, video blogging was so new, and YouTube had yet to launch. YouTube launched a few months after the conference.
Wow.
There was a lot of sessions about what do you do with these video files when you put them online? Because at that point, you know, you had to have like QuickTime installed. You had to have Windows Media Player, all these different things. And it was fascinating just remembering those days. And like, wow, I remember when video was so hard to do, and now you just upload it to YouTube and you're done. And it's crazy. The technology has just made blogging explode into the other areas, especially with audio. Like, podcasting was around then, but again, people didn't really know what to do with the files once they created them.
So at the end of the day, your conference, who do you need? Who needs to attend? Who absolutely needs to be there?
People who want to use this technology and learn how to integrate it. So whether it's blogs or podcasting or YouTube. So the people who want to learn that, and also the people who just want to learn how to tell a better story. Mm-hmm. And integrate, what they're doing, and maybe connect with other people who are like-minded and get inspiration.
I suspect that a lot of people don't write a blog or don't start because bottom line is they're afraid they're going to embarrass themselves, and they don't want to do that. We reach the point where we have certain status in society. We don't necessarily want to expose ourselves to the ridicule that can be there. Is this going to help overcome that fear, or is it going to just make me feel worse?
I think it's definitely a cathartic experience to start blogging for the first time, put your voice out there, tell your story, and realize, wow, not only am I getting to tell my story, but I see people are actually reading it and listening, and they're commenting, and they think it's cool too. So it's a really cathartic kind of a thing, and it inspires you to do more of it.
2 days that might have the power to change your life. Northern Voice 2012. My guest's Shane Burley. You can find him at shaneburley.com. I'll have a link to that. And I didn't even get a chance to talk about the S&M Rants, your podcast, which I think we should do a whole thing on. It's not about
S&M.
Just give me 2 seconds on it. What is it?
It's a podcast where we ridicule really stupid criminals.
I think that's an awesome idea. So you basically talk about all the... It's almost the Darwin Awards, right?
Pretty much. We pick two criminals for that week. We talk about them. We sometimes reenact them, which is more often than not. And then, so we have a little bit, because it's the book.
Oh, you guys, this is how this must have gone down, and then you kind of give a little voiceover
pretty
to
much,
it?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
And so myself and Monica, who
which
does
is where
the podcast.
S&M come from, Shane.
Yes,
Monica,
yes, not, exactly. Yeah. Which is why I mentioned her name, because
yes, good,
just to be clear.
Well done.
And then we invite usually a comedian to come in and give us their sort of 2 cents on, and then...
I got a comedian sitting right back there, Art Factori. He's a funny guy.
Yes.
Art.
All right. I got your name.
Hilarious.
I'll get your contact details.
He's hilarious. He can be a questionable character in almost any of your reenactments. But back to the we'll do this in the future. The Northern Voice Conference is June 15th, 16th. For more information, northernvoice.com. Shane Burley at shaneburley.com.
.ca. Northernvoice.ca.
Northernvoice.ca. Shane Burley at shaneburley.com. And finally, the new media blog, which is Jonathan Narvey, JNarvey, NARVEY.com, to find him. his voice. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Mac Tech, brought to you by Mac Station, your Apple solutions experts.
Rick Yeager joins me now online. Rick is our expert on all things Mac. How's it going, Rick?
It's going very well, Steve. How's it going over there?
It's going pretty well with me. Let's talk about battery life. The iPhone is not legendary for having the best battery performance on the planet. Actually, to be fair, no smartphones are. But the more we use them, the shorter the battery life. And I've run out of battery a few times the last couple of days. So last couple of weeks. I mean, so what can I do to extend my battery life?
I found a little app that Philips makes called Battery Sense. It's a free app, and it runs on the iPad as well as the iPhone. And it will give you it'll kind of run a simulation, since no apps are allowed to actually control your settings. It'll give you some idea of the kind of battery life you can expect from your iPhone in its current state for doing various tasks, and it'll give you some advice. And here's some of the things to keep in mind if you want to extend your battery life. As far as the life of the battery long term, to make sure that your battery can hold a charge and hold a long charge, use it until it dies. And I don't know about you, but this is one that I cheat on all the time. When I'm at my desk, my iPhone is constantly plugged in and charging, and I know I'm just killing that battery.
Does that kill it, eh?
Just to have it constantly getting that charge. So to use it until it runs down and then charge it.
Okay. So avoid the temptation to have it plugged in.
Yes.
Okay.
Another thing is to keep it cool. Not keep it cold, not keep it chilly, but don't let it overheat.
Mm-hmm.
These devices can run hot on their own. And I was telling you earlier, I tripped the failsafe in my old iPhone when I had it kind of mounted to my car window on a sunny day. It just heated up, and eventually it just gave up and shut itself down because I was abusing it.
Too hot, so, I'm taking a break.
Yep, too hot, I'm going to break. Shut me down. Another thing is quit background applications. With, I think it was iOS 5, they allowed for multitasking, which meant you can have all kinds of things running in the background.
Yeah, and it doesn't affect the performance very much, but it will affect your battery life, especially ones that are constantly polling the GPS or the cell network to know where they are, right?
For sure.
And how people do that, just in case they wonder, is just double tap twice on your home button, and that'll bring up all of your apps that are open. And then you just hold and tap on one of them, and they'll start to wiggle, and you can just start shutting them right down.
Yeah, tap that little it's a little minus in the circle, I think, in that case.
Yeah.
And it'll shut them down. Also, check the brightness on your screen. If you don't need the screen super bright, just set it to a lower brightness and turn on the auto brightness setting.
Okay.
So that it'll adjust depending on the ambient light around you, because that backlight is eating up juice.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, if you're not using Bluetooth or anything.
Yeah, turn that off.
Turn it off.
So easy to do, yep.
I mean, turn off anything you're not using. I mean, if you're not using the cellular data, turn that off.
Okay.
I do that frequently when I'm, cross-border shopping.
Oh, yeah, that's a way to... Now, do you leave your phone on? I always put it into a kind of, what do you call it, airplane mode when I'm across the border,
so
I don't accidentally
check. That turns off pretty much every wireless service. It does allow you to turn Wi-Fi back on, but if you're not going to use it, you can turn the whole thing down. I mean, I know a lot of people that barely use their phone for a phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, it's a weird thing to say, but if you want to extend your battery life, you can turn off cellular data. And, I mean, say you just want to watch a movie while you're on a flight. That's perfectly fine. Just turn it into airplane mode. And
there you go.
You'll have enough juice.
Okay.
Location services. I had no idea until I ran that Philips app I mentioned, Battery Sense, how much that affects your battery life. It was like cutting my battery life in half.
Well, I'm looking at how many apps right now as I look at my list use location services, and there has to be 20 apps that I have loaded that use the location services. They're all turned on. So anytime that I've opened one of those, it's going to be using some juice.
Yeah, so if you want to turn those off, it's in settings under general.
Yep.
There's location services. And just slide the little off button, especially if you can't think of a reason why that app should be using location services, don't need it off.
Okay.
Turn the data push settings in your mail to either less often or slide it just off.
Okay.
And then when you open up mail, it'll check manually each time you launch mail. And check mail less often. That's another thing. Every time you do, and every time you wake the phone up. It goes to sleep, you wake it up. It goes to sleep, wake it up. It's losing power.
Okay.
Auto lock sooner is what I'm told. I've never tested this one, but supposedly that helps as well.
That would be too irritating.
It would.
Because it would shut your phone down. It shuts down too quick as it is for me now, so we're going to pass on that one.
Pass on that. Turn off the equalizer on the iPod. So many, I don't know too many people that use their iPhones as iPods.
Okay.
But if you do, turn off the equalizer. It probably doesn't help anyway.
Okay.
Don't have fun with your phone is basically the message. Don't have fun. Which is probably, you said that at the top of the segment, that most smartphones are not good at battery life is
no.
Because they're just too darn fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much that you can do on these things. So one of the points is to use less battery intensive things, such as internet calling, web surfing, FaceTime calling, video watching, game playing. So stick to boring things like ebook reading and listening to music.
And that will extend your battery life dramatically. We're going to have all of Rick's tips on how to get more out of your iPad and your iPhone and to a lesser extent iPad, because the iPad battery certainly does last a lot better. We're going to have all of his tips online for more information. If you want to see any of Rick's other stories, appman.tv is the site. Thanks, Rick.
Thank you, Steve.
MacTech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation. Who said business and pleasure don't mix? Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me in studio now, Cedric Tetzel from London Drugs. Cedric, how are you doing?
I am doing well, thank you.
Cedric, today I want to talk to you about picking routers, because I had an issue in my home that I don't know if I've solved it properly, but I've got an Apple AirPort router, and it should cover. I live in a fairly small house, wood-framed, but there were some black holes in my house that I simply could not get a good signal to, and it would cut in and out and drop. And so I finally added a repeater station partway through, but I don't know whether I did the right thing or whether or not I could have alleviated that problem with a different router, because I always thought the Apple routers are pretty well rated. But I was thinking, you know, if I was buying a new router today, I think I'd want to do a little more research.
You're right. Your problem, or the problem you described, probably affects 9 out of 10 households.
Really? There's dead spots in all of them?
We get that many requests for more information. A lot of things can interfere with signals.
Mm-hmm.
It could be water pipes.
Okay.
In the one end of the house. Radio signals don't like going through water.
I didn't
so
know that.
So if you have water pipes, you have radiant heaters, it could be a problem.
Oh.
You can, depending on the bandwidth that the router is working on, it can also be interfered with by household appliances running off the same frequency. See, we don't have to worry about the older routers, the Type Gs and the Type Bs and all that stuff. We can put that aside. Everything you buy today are so-called Type N or 802.11n series routers.
Mm-hmm.
but that doesn't actually tell you too much.
Because they have different speeds, too.
They have different speeds. To start off with, they're two speeds, 2.4 gigahertz and 5.0 gigahertz.
Now, just off the top of my head, I'd have to say 2.4 gigahertz is bad because everybody's cordless phones is on 2.4, isn't it?
However, that's not the whole story.
Oh, darn it.
Of course. The 2.4 gigahertz, you're right, you will get more interference. It gets worse because in order for it to get the maximum speed out of a 2.4 gigahertz router, it needs to have two channels streaming together. 2.4 gigahertz only gives you an option to choose between three different channels. So if it's getting interference in any one of those, you're now working on just one stream. In other words, half your maximum speed.
Okay.
But the good thing about 2.4 gigahertz, it has wide coverage. So if you have a larger house and you want to have signals reaching from one corner to the next, you have better chance of that signal reaching you in the farther reaches than you do with 5.0 gigahertz. Now,
okay,
to confuse things.
Yes, because it's not confusing enough.
It is. You will have better coverage in a wider area with 2.4, but you are prone to more interference and problems.
Okay.
So that's the one part. The other part is the 5.0. 5.0, higher bandwidth, it gives you or gives the system an option of 12 different channels to choose from to pair up. And there are less household equipment running off that frequency, and therefore you have a greater probability of getting a clean channel to work with, and you have a greater chance of running at a higher speed than a 2.4.
But the signal is shorter?
But there's always that but.
Okay.
And that's the reason is the signal is shorter. It doesn't cover as much. So I have personal experience. I have a what is known as a dual band router at home.
Okay.
So it runs both 2.4 and 5.0 gigahertz. And that I find that my notebook, when I'm downstairs near the router, is happily humming along at 5.0 gigahertz on that line. But when I go upstairs off to the far corners where my study is, it loses the signal, which is rather aggravating. So if everything remains equal, our recommendation is to use 2.4 gigahertz if you have something you move around a lot.
Okay.
So if you have a notebook or an iPad that you move around in the house, use 2.4 because the coverage is better. But if you have something that is very demanding of bandwidth, such as video streaming, gaming, that sort of thing, I would stick with a 5.0 gigahertz, but do exactly what you did, is to put a repeater into those areas that have dead spots.
Okay, so let's back it up. If you're in a small apartment, if you're Art and you're living in a fairly small area, a 5.0 gigahertz router is probably going to be fine.
Absolutely.
In a small area. That's going to be what you're going to want to choose. And is there a price difference between the 2.4, the 5, and the dual band routers? Is there a big price difference?
Generally, you would actually get the budget price ones at 2.4 gigahertz, single band only.
Okay.
So those range in the $40 to $60 range.
Wow, they've gotten really inexpensive.
So that's what you're getting,
okay.
single band, single speed. As you go higher, you can also look at the dual bands, which gives you 2.4 and 5. And some of those within that range, which ranges from, say, $70, $80 to $200, those can also do now multiple streams within that bandwidth.
So you can have it's broadcasting both 2.4 and 5 gigahertz at the same time?
And twinning the speeds in some of those too at a higher range.
Okay, so that is going to work really nicely if in a lot of cases. That's going to give you the best coverage options. Now, how can you tell when you're setting up your notebook, how can you tell whether you're connecting at 2.4 or 5 gigahertz?
Generally, what you do is when you set up the router, we recommend you set an ID, an SSID to the
the
router.
Which is a name, yeah.
Which is a name. So the name of the network, and my recommendation is you name it differently.
Okay, so as you're setting it up, you can name the two different
when you set it up either through the software that's provided or through the manual way, which is my preferred way for various reasons, is you can name it. So you can have the Vancouver LAN as your 2.4, and you can have the Victoria band as the 5.0,
okay,
just to remind yourself. And
then you just, when you look at your Wi-Fi list in your computer, you'll see the signal strength.
Yeah. And in some cases, when you put in an extender, it'll extend either to 2.4 or to 5, and in some cases, both. And what usually those extenders do is they tag on an extension to the name automatically.
Yeah.
So instead of having the Vancouver, it will say Vancouver 2.4 extended. So you know that when you're upstairs and you're losing signals or out in the backyard losing signal, that's the one you can get to.
Yes, you can try and find. Now, I found, now I've got an Apple AirPort. I think it's just a single band, but I think it's 5 gigahertz is the Apple AirPort Extreme that I'm running.
Yeah.
But I didn't find the whole process of plugging in and installing and configuring the AirPort Express, which is I'm using as the repeater. I didn't find that tremendously intuitive. It wasn't all that difficult, but it also didn't strike me as this is a no-brainer. And unfortunately, these are the sorts of things we only do once. And then if we have a problem, it's a year later, we got to kind of go back and do again. There's some good online resources that help people walk through this.
Actually, setting up a router is incredibly simple.
We say that, but it doesn't work properly, it doesn't seem so simple.
So regardless of the brand of the router, they all have an address that are very common,
mm-hmm,
which is why I mentioned earlier I prefer to set up my routers manually.
Yeah.
Right? So most routers, when you buy it off the shelf today, if you flip it open, on the bottom would be where the serial number goes.
Yeah.
These days, a lot of routers would mark down the defaulted IP address.
Yeah.
The username for the administrator and the defaulted password, all on the bottom. So you flip it over. So what you do is when you buy a router, you manually hook up by cable the router to the computer. Open up your browser, Internet Explorer, Safari, whatever you're using, and go to 192.168. And usually the last two series of numbers are the ones printed on the bottom of the box. Would be something along the lines of .0.1 or .1.1.
Yeah.
You log on to the software that's already built into the router.
Yeah, as soon as you type that into your web address, it'll pop up the browser.
And then
the router. Yeah.
And then it'll put in your user password, and you simply go to the tab, depending on the application that or the router that you're using, go to the tab to put in the name, put in the security and a password, and you're done.
Yeah.
So rather than go through a lot of the twists and turns of using some software, you can do it manually, and you don't have to worry about which brand of router you're using. One other reason you do this is, and this is where it's very difficult to find because it's not easily discoverable, because what happens today if you, and I have a personal experience, I subscribed to a particular internet service provider who told me that I can get this bajillion bandwidth increase for less money. I thought, gee, that's a great deal. I will buy into that. But in order to get that, they sent me a new modem, which is fine, that had a built-in router.
Yeah.
So
I haven't had good experience with those in my life.
I'm glad you said it. So I won't name this provider because they've had actually given me wonderful service. But the router portion of that was not very good, as you said. My Apple TV started to be rebooted, having to be rebooted every time I use it. I lost signals in the middle of a movie. It drove me nuts. So I cascaded it. Mm-hmm. Cascaded my original router. And what I did is all I did is go through into 192.168.1.1 like I did before and change the IP address of that router to something completely weird. So I kept the 192.168, but the last two digits I changed to something I could remember. So 9999 if you're a Gretzky fan. And I disabled DHCP. I then plugged the router into the back of the modem's combo unit. And now I have two routers, the one that came with the modem and the one that actually I know can reach the entire house, unlike the one that came with the ISP. And in less than 5 minutes, I found that my Apple TV was happy with me.
Everything was happy.
Everything was happy.
all of this detail, actually, London Drugs has a blog, and you've got this whole story that we've just gone through. If people are looking for details, kind of like an FAQ on picking your routers and troubleshooting, it's at the ldnerdblog.blogspot.ca. I will, of course, have a link to this on my website. And probably the best thing that people can do if they've got questions is what? Drop by London Drugs. Because that's your right. Guys are all trained in this stuff, like, really well, aren't they?
They are, certainly.
If they're not, we want to hear about it. Cedric Tetzel is the technology buyer for London Drugs. I thank him very much for your time. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech. That is all the time we have for this week's show. Reminder, drop by our website at dottotech.com. We do have a giveaway this week. We're giving away a solid-state drive, an SSD, from Kingston, 120 gigabytes that will change your life. You haven't bought a Mac yet, have you, Art? You've gone out, you've done all the other Apple stuff, but you haven't bought a Mac.
Apple TV, iPhone, Mac Air, MacBook Pro, I think will be my next purchase.
Oh, so yeah, but you haven't got the Mac
yet. Not yet.
Yeah, soon. Actually, there's rumors that Apple is going to be announcing new MacBooks coming up in the next week or so. So it'll be interesting to see what's happening with them. There's a lot of talk there might be a Retina display in the works in one of the MacBooks. If there is, that's going to be a really impressive display on, you know, the screen on the notebook. Reminder, just drop by our website for that. So, Art, are you going to blog? Do you have a blog?
I have a blog. Artfactora.wordpress.com. Or actually, artfactora.com.
Do you blog regularly?
Not as regularly as I used to. I kind of fell off the wagon with things like Twitter. And,
yeah. Because, like, are you thinking you want to take in the Northern Lights Conference?
I probably would be interested, absolutely. Yeah. I think the motivation, because my blog was always about comedy, food, and just sort of random things in my life.
Yeah. And did you have anybody read it?
It was weird. Yeah. The best part, I think, about my blog was the fact that I could look at how people got there.
Yeah.
So the searches. So, you know, I'll make sure that I tag properly about Vancouver or comics in town or Bacon Explosion was a big one that I'll tell you about that after the show. Okay. Or just Google it. It's amazing. I did a blog about that. But to see how many people actually found my blog because they Googled my name was kind of odd.
Okay.
Yeah.
Paul, you've got a blog?
Sort of. My website is a blog. I probably should do something with it because it's one great big long page.
We don't want to send people to it.
No, it'll take forever to load.
You got to create some structure before we let
absolutely
visit it. Now you're going to be back next week. Next week, you know, a couple of weeks ago we talked about apps for the first time. We did a live show on apps, and it really resonated nicely with the audience. So we're gonna make it a monthly live feature next week. And you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna call it App Wednesday.
I love it.
Wow, that one out of all the votes. Out of all the names that we came up with,
we only had one
name.
We only had one name. It was the name I came up with. But you should appreciate it having gone, as did I, to Catholic school. App Wednesday is a play on words for Ash Wednesday. Do I have to point this out?
You don't have to point it out. I just want to make sure that everyone's on our side with that.
And I think that App Wednesday is going to become as looked forward to as Ash Wednesday.
Or perhaps maybe even the next Palm Sunday. It could be the next Palm Sunday.
Okay. We'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
I think we have run out of time. We have run out of material. But next week it will be all apps. So if you have a favorite app, drop us a note and we'll make sure that it gets on our App Wednesday show next week. Paul DeMera, Art Factora, I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.